The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk.
Thanks to spiritmotorgroup.ie. With secure online payments, buying your next used car has never been easier. With Spirit Motor Group.
Carl Dieter of Irish Mortgage Brokers is on the line. Carl, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. How are you?
I'm very well. Now, first of all, things have changed in so many ways. Let's talk about saving for a mortgage, because hopefully you're saving more.
For some people, yes. For other people, their mortgage dreams would have disintegrated in the last few months. So it's very much, there's different stories for different people. But for those who are trying to save, what we are seeing is that a lot of them are doing a better job of it, because you kind of can't spend your money at the moment. But the best way to save, which is something that I'm often asked, is more about the methodology, because interest rates on savings are so terrible at the moment. And the way to do it, if you are trying to save for a mortgage, ideally, is to put your savings in a separate account so that it's very visible, and ensure that you don't tap back into that savings. Or if you do, limit it, because if you're saying, look, I save $1,000 a month, and every month $1,000 goes in and $500 comes out the week before payday, then you know, you're not really saving $1,000. So that's
so transparency. Transparency is the name of the game. Now, what happens if you're unable to make your payments for your mortgage at the moment? How much breathing space have you got?
You've got a lot, in fact, because the banks took an early lead on this, and it was followed up with support from the European Banking Authority and the Central Bank, so that if you had to take a payment break, your credit history won't be wrecked, and you can get up to 6 months on that. Now, you obviously do, there's a price to be paid for that, and you need to be aware of what you're doing. But the banks are on top of this one. They've done more restructures in the last kind of 2 months than they did in the first 6 years of the financial crisis. So it's very positive consumer news on that front, that if you have been impacted, if you can't pay, talk to your lender. They'll assess your case. They'll do it quickly, and that can be remedied pretty fast. Now, in 6 months' time or in 3 months' time, you know, you've obviously got to have some way back out of this. But that's a question for a different day.
Now, if you're thinking about getting a mortgage during a time like this, first of all, I mean, is it easy to deal with financial institutions? Do they have the personnel in place? And what kind of things are they now looking at that they didn't look at before the pandemic?
Well, it's the same as it always was, minus some pandemic-specific queries that they're going to have. So they still want to see that you've got a propensity to save, to be able to pay a debt, that you're within the requirements for the loan versus the size of your income and versus the price of the property. But they will then start to ask questions from you know, a couple of weeks ago onwards. This is going to be part of it, is to say, has the coronavirus pandemic had any impact on your employment? And if you got the temporary wage subsidy scheme, you'll have to be off that and prove that you're back at regular work in order to get a loan. Now, some industries, things like the service industry, they may start to look at that slightly different, because there is obviously still a concern that things could go back and then rise up again, and you could have a lot of people out of work once more. So it's kind of sector dependent about how hard they push on that piece. But you will, if you're saying that you earn a certain amount, you can't be on a temporary wage subsidy and claiming that you earn that amount at the same time. So, you know, they just want to look at that. And as well, just remember that if you're agreeing a property price, that the loan depends on the value that the property gets from the valuer, and that the bank will lend based on the lesser of the contract or the valuation. So if you go sale agreed at, say, $200,000, the valuer says, look, because of the way things are, that property is worth $190,000. Well, then, you know, you can only get a 90% loan as a first-time buyer of the $190,000, not the $200,000.
The lower amount.
Exactly.
Now, Carl, the complicated thing of looking at the different lenders and how to compare. You know, you get fixed for so many years. You might get money back in your pocket if you go here, there and yon. It's a tough call. Who do I go to?
Obviously, as a broker, I'm always going to say go to a broker, because the one nice thing about using a good broker is that it's like going to all the banks at once. Whereas if you go to a bank, by law, they can't actually tell you about all the features that other lenders have.
So, who pays the broker, though? Is it the lender who ultimately pays the broker, or does the borrower pony up front?
It depends on the broker. So some brokers will charge you a fee to get started, because obviously that's they have costs to cover, and that has to be disclosed to you before you begin. The bank also pay the broker. If you go direct to a bank, they just pay themselves over time from keeping all the profit from that loan. So it's a case really of deciding, look, you can get a loan on your own. Like, it's absolutely fine. You can go direct to your bank. That's absolutely fine too. But if you want to make sure that you've seen the full scope of what's out there, you simply have to go to a broker, in my view, unless you're really into just researching this kind of stuff, which most people aren't. And there's benefits that go with loans that not every bank has. So not every lender, for instance, will let you take a payment break just without any question. Others won't allow you to make overpayments when you're on a fixed rate. So there's things like that, that do start to matter. And to know all of that, like I said, typically you're talking about going to a mortgage broker to find that stuff out.
Is there a bottom line here that virtually everyone or nearly everyone could save money by changing, by switching?
Yeah, there certainly is. I mean, like the main determinant of a loan, there's three main things. There's the amount you borrow, there's how long you borrow it for, and then the interest rate that you pay while you've borrowed. And if you suddenly were able to not borrow as much, that would make a big difference. Typically, you can't really change that, or you could pay it off early, I guess, if you had the ability to. The term that you've borrowed for, again, that can kind of shift a little bit if you were to try and pay it off quicker. But of the things that you can easily control, the single biggest determinant that is within everyone's power, and strangely, which people don't tend to do as often, is to switch and get a better price elsewhere, because banks don't reward loyalty. And it's a really amazing thing. I mean, you would have interest rates out there on a home that would be, say, 4.5% on a standard variable rate. And there's actually tens of thousands of people listening right now who are paying that price. And I'm here to tell you that you can literally cut that in half if you just go to the effort of changing a mortgage to a different provider.
Now, some of the questions coming in. Bart from Clonsilla. Myself and my partner have been saving for our deposit for the last year on top of paying our ever-increasing rent. But the lack of weddings, nights out and weekends away brought on by COVID has got us closer than ever to meeting our target. Now the difficulty is getting value for our money. Are we better off holding off buying till the end of the year with the ongoing housing market uncertainty? Now, there's the question.
Yeah, great question, Bart. Look, And sadly, I don't actually have a perfect answer for this one, Pat. But what I would say is, say for instance, if you were renting, I'll just make an example. Say you're paying $1,200 a month or something, and you were thinking of buying a house for $200,000. Well, if you were to do that today, you'd get a loan of $180,000, and in a year's time, your loan balance might be say $175,000, because the first year you're mostly paying rent. But your mortgage payment on $200,000 at the moment is around $850 a month. Equally, your rent would be costing you close to, you know, $14,500. But if prices fell and you bought it $180,000, let's just say prices fell 10%, then your balance on day one is $162 versus that $175 minus the difference of the rent. So you're actually better off by about $8,000 in that example. So if you believe that prices are going to fall, and I think in the main, I would be in the camp that we can expect prices to fall. That would be reasonable in my point of view, then you probably are better off holding off for a while. But then again, you know, if you're going to do something over 25 years and you really find the house that you want and there's only one of it as opposed to being a scheme, in that case, yeah, it doesn't really make a difference.
Okay, this is an interesting one. My sister is a professional woman. She needs a 4.5 times income mortgage because she's single. She's in a permanent position in a state body. What are her chances of getting one of those 4.5 times mortgages?
Well, they're kind of low because the lenders have pulled back on them due to the pandemic. But there are, for instance, if you work for the state, there are certain lenders who really want to focus on those people. So there's one called ICS Dilosc, which they distribute only through brokers. And if you're a state employee, they'll actually put you two pegs up your earnings. So like say if you're, I don't know what scale this person is on, but say if you're, you know, a senior, they'll put you two steps up the wage ladder and they'll assess your loan based on that. So there's certain things you can do to still make it better for you, but again, it's dependent in this case on the job that they work at and then also that lender. But I would just say again, in the case of ICS Mortgages, which is a company that people might not have heard of, you know, they've got interest rates that are below 2.5%, you know, very competitive. And again, you'd only get it through a broker.
Another one, a full-time job, no mortgage. I'm 57. Could I get a mortgage? That's from Sean.
Yes, but I hope that you have big savings, because what happens is your ability to borrow is normally pegged on to roughly your retirement age. So, if they were retiring at age 65, that means you're looking at an 8-year loan. So just to give you some perspective, if you borrowed $200,000, say at 3% over 25 years, it'd cost you $950 a month. Borrow the same amount over 8 years, it's $2,345 a month. So you can quickly see, just by the mechanical nature of having less years to repay, how much that goes up. And you've also got to prove the ability to make those payments as well. So it gets harder for people when they get older to borrow. I think borrowing money is kind of like having kids. You know, if you do it younger, it gets easier over time. Like you're younger when you're out of the hard part of it. If you wait until you're much older, it can be harder to do. So that's just part of being a human being, I guess.
Okay. Another one here. Paying 3.7% with PTSB, 13 years left. Should I move lender and to whom?
Okay. So let me just work that out. That's 3.7% in 13 years. I'll just give an example. Say they had a loan of, let's say, $200,000. Would that be a realistic loan to have over 13 years? That loan at the moment would be $1,616. If you were to move to, let me see who's got a really great rate, say Ulster Bank have a 2-year fixed rate of 2.3%, that would go from 1616 to 1484, which is minus 1484. Sorry, it would save you 132 a month, which is 1500 a year by the remaining 13 years. If it lasts, it would be 20 grand savings. So yeah, that would make sense to me.
That would make sense. Another one. I'm going to be applying for a mortgage soon. I'm also looking to buy a car in the near future. In terms of getting approval for a mortgage, would I be better off getting a loan for the car, leaving my savings intact, or using my savings to buy a car outright and avoid having another monthly bill, which I'd have to explain to the lender?
Yeah, normally what happens is your ability to repay a loan comes down directly in line with whatever payments you've already got. And if you have a car loan that you might be paying, say, 8% on, then, you know, that payment can actually eradicate, like a 10 grand car loan can eradicate, say, 50 or 60,000 euros worth of borrowing capacity. My view on cars is always buy a good secondhand car and try not to borrow. Most of the depreciation in a car takes place in years 1, 2, and 3. So your best value is after year 3, as long as the car is not a banger. And if you can avoid any interest on it, that's also a good thing, because the rate tends to be higher. So in that case, if you had the ability to just go out, buy the car for cash, just don't go overboard, then you're in really good shape for borrowing. That said, you might have to do a bit on your savings, but instead of having a car payment, just make those payments into your savings and move on like that. So there's always a balancing act to do, Pat, between the reality that you're faced with and what you would ideally like to do. I think people just need to think through it and decide what's the best path for them. But generally, I would be against borrowing. I think borrowing can be very destructive. I say that as someone who peddles debt for a living, but I'm just giving the caveat that there's good and bad types.
Okay, another one here. I'm about to enter into a 3-year fixed rate mortgage at 2.9%. Is this a wise move due to a possibility of falling interest rates?
Yeah, so if you're getting a 3-year fixed rate at that, that rate, it looks like it's a permanent TSB rate, possibly EBS. They're the only two ones that have a price at that at the moment. And is it a good choice? Well, I think that rates do have further to fall. But in order to avail of a falling rate, you've got to be on a rate that allows you to break the rate, which is typically a variable. So if you look at the likes of EBS, their variable rate is 3.7%. So you'd be hoping to capture, say, 20 basis points in the future. And to do that, you've got to pay 80 basis points more today. Does that make sense to you? Why would you pay more today to possibly get a better rate in the future when you could just get a good rate now? And that would be the reason why I would say in that instance, take that fixed rate.
Here's an interesting one here. I'm property rich, cash poor. I'm 60, living alone in a very big house with a huge garden. House was built 30 years ago. At one time, there was something available whereby the banks would give you money to lodge your deeds, and then when you pass away, it can be sold and they get their money back. Is there anything, I think it was called equity release, is there anything like that still out there, Carl?
No. No, those are called reversionary loans or shared home investment plans. And what that was is it's like, you know, the way when you pay a loan that you pay interest and the balance comes down, that's called amortization. You can also have negative amortization where it's like you borrow money and it's compounding, but it's compounding up and eating into your equity. It was something that existed probably about, you know, it was really before the last financial crisis that those loans became popular. And it allowed people who had a valuable home but maybe didn't save for a pension to suddenly have money. But the downside of it was, obviously, is we're living for longer. You know, those companies relied on people dying at a certain time in order to get their money back. And then families would realize that their family home was now being impacted. That, yeah, when they expected perhaps to inherit it one day, it just caused too many problems. So they're not really around anymore. There is actually good rationale for having them, but we don't have them.
A last and final quick question. I'm sure the answer is very quick to this one. Bob says, I owe 90K on a tracker. Can I make an offer, say, of 60K to clear it? And would they take it?
Bob, you can offer whatever you want. The answer is no. Because the fact is, and that's, well, look, that's the quick answer. Any losses on trackers have been booked so long ago that, look, this is now, it's all baked into the cake. Right. What I would say is that just be grateful that you have a tracker. Not everyone does. You're sitting pretty. You know, don't over-egg the pudding, Bob.
Keep paying. All right.
you're already on a winner.
Carl Dieter of Irish Mortgage Brokers, thank you very much for joining us. And we'll be continuing our Bang for Your Buck series tomorrow when Dermot Good will be looking at the best ways to save on your health insurance. Get your questions in by texting 53106.
The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk.
Thanks to spiritmotorgroup.ie. With secure online payments, buying your next used car has never been easier. With Spirit Motor Group.